Welcome into the install with Greg Cosell of NFL Films. Greg, you made it. It's week one. We have football tomorrow as we tape this on a Wednesday afternoon. Bills and Rams will kick things off to open the season. But finally, we can get into some actual tape study once we start to get further and further into the season.
Yeah, no, I can't wait for the first week. You start to see real things. You see schemes, tactics. Now, obviously, early in the season, sometimes, Buck, the interesting thing about early in the season is, as you know, when the schedule comes out, teams become very focused on certainly week one, but really the first quarter of the season. Mm-hmm. That's the way the teams deal with things. And you know, what you see week one might not be a true rendition of the way they'll play other teams as they continue on their schedule, because you know, week one is very important. There's only 17 games and, you know, teams do want to get off to a good start. There's something about week one that seems bigger than just a normal game.
Yeah. And that's certainly what we've been talking about with Titans coaches and players this week. It's more about, you know, prepare yourself. You know, if you're going to plan on defense, plan to attack more than you're going to react in a week one situation, especially with the a lot of variables for a new coaching staff and some new personnel like they'll be seeing on offense from the New York Giants, you know, they'll open the season with.
And for Tennessee, it's a really important game in the sense that I'm sure the fan base thinks this way anyway, in that the Giants are probably viewed as not a great team, a team that the Titans should beat. And whether that happens or not, only time will tell. But, you know, that's why a game like this becomes very important, not just for the team, but really for the fan base as well.
Well, and I'm looking forward to taking a little bit of a closer look at New York, because I understand that they have been down bad for a little while, right, and that there have been some decisions that they're still trying to dig their way out of. But that doesn't mean that they can't show competency, because they're still professional athletes, and a professional athlete can get hot at any time, which is what makes this fun. And, you know, provided the coaching staff puts a good plan in place, like I know you enjoy, Greg, now we actually get to see the chess match of the coaching staffs versus their opposing coaching staffs.
Without question. So with that in mind, where do you want to start here, sir?
I think we should start with the Giants on defense, Greg, because Azeez Ojulari was a really good player for them last year. And certainly their defensive front has not been one of the issues that's kind of bogged them down. It sounds like he's a long shot, as is Kayvon Thibodeau, to play in week one. And I'm wondering what you think of what their defense looks like right now and how it may be impacted by the potential absence of those players.
Well, obviously, I think they would both be starters. So now you're going into your depth. So it's not quite as good. But I think probably the larger discussion is the new coordinator. Obviously, they have a new head coach as well, but the new coordinator is Wink Martindale. Mm-hmm. And he came from Baltimore, and he's been in this league for a long time. And he is a very difficult coordinator to prepare for and to play against because of the multiplicity of looks that he gives you, particularly on third down. And I think that that's something that the Titans need to be prepared for. It's something their offensive line clearly needs to be prepared for. Certainly, Brian Tannehill does as well. In a sense, everybody does, because if you're getting pressure, even receivers need to understand, do I need to shorten my route? What do I need to do if I get pressure? One of the things that Wink Martindale is really, really good at is showing pressure from one side of a formation, which often dictates a protection call to that side, which means more bodies go to that side, but then actually bringing the pressure from the other side where there's fewer bodies and the protection can't pick it up.
Right.
So that's one thing Wink Martindale is really, really good at. He uses all defenders essentially as potential rushers. So theoretically, they have 11 pass rushers, you know, and again, that obviously doesn't happen. But in many ways, that's the way he wants you to feel, particularly when you get into those third down situations and they're in their sub defenses.
And that's something we talked to Mike Vrabel about a lot today, Greg. He said the protection meetings this week have been significantly longer than, you know, the normal ones, just because of what Wink Martindale is and how frequently he, not only does he show you different looks, but how often he likes to bring additional pressure that way.
Yeah. And look, there's all kinds of protection concepts. You know, we're not going to get deep into the weeds, but you know, you there's teams that deal with, you know, most likely rushers, and those are the guys you might pick up. Then there's teams that have a concept called sort protection, where you're trying to sort it out as it happens. So, because you can't change the protection in the middle of the play, you have a protection call.
Right.
But it's hard. It's a difficult difficult scheme to play against. And like I said, any of the 11 could be involved in the pass rush on any given play. So it's very difficult. I remember having this conversation with Dean Pease a couple of summers ago, and he made the same point, not about Wink Martindale, but about the fact that he wanted the offense to believe that any of the 11, you know, any number of the 11 could come on any given play. And I think Wink Martindale probably shares the same philosophy.
I'm certain that's true. In fact, I'm certain that he has rookie right tackle Nick Petitfrère circled this week as a place where they're going to look to show him some different kind of things that he's seen in the preseason.
Without question. And you know what? Petitfrère will struggle. He'll have some bad snaps this week, without question. It's just built into what the NFL is. And now that the games are starting for real, you know, no matter how long those meetings are, that you said they had longer meetings, and no matter how many times they go over it on the iPad and on the field, it's not the same as the game.
Right. And it, as we talked about the Titans last year, Greg, and how often they were playing in third and long, and how their style of play doesn't necessarily lend itself to getting ahead of the sticks. The amount of protection issues that they seem to have kind of multiplied by simply how often they were playing in third and seven plus, and with the idea that, as you've brought up before on this podcast, that they had to help on the left side as much as they did the right side, which is significant given Taylor Lewan's pedigree, for lack of a better
term. And look, this might be a game, particularly if Ojulari and Thibodeau are out, where they just have to say to Taylor Lewan, look, you're going to have to protect one-on-one. That's going to be your assignment this week, because without question, there will be snaps in which they have to help Petitfrère. That's going to happen, because his head's going to be spinning a little bit, you know, as I said, once the game actually starts. So, but you raise a great point that we did speak about a number of weeks ago, and that is, when you do get into those third and long situations, will they be keeping a tight end and a back end to help with protection? And again, then you get stuck with only three receivers as really viable receivers. And the other thing that Wink Martindale does well, and all teams that show multiple front and pressure looks do well, is they don't always rush. Sometimes they show those looks, force you to make a protection call, then they drop people out and they rush four, and you're stuck with three receivers running routes against seven defenders.
Yeah. No, it's like we've talked about before. There's first and second down, and then there's what defensive coordinators do on third down, and it can look drastically different in certain circumstances. On the other side of the ball, Greg, for New York, Brian Daboll, obviously the head coach. Mike Kafka sounds like he's going to call the plays, coming over from Kansas City. The personnel we are familiar with, they've added some new parts and pieces. Wandale Robinson, most notably, is the second-round pick. Daniel Jones, let's start there with what his traits are as a quarterback, because there can be any number of reasons why a player like him struggles.
Sure.
But I think to just kind of set the profile first would be good.
Yeah. And look, Daniel Jones, even though he can run, is really a pocket quarterback. Mm-hmm. He's actually a pretty tough pocket quarterback too. I went through a lot of his plays this summer, particularly on third down. And I was more impressed than I thought I would be, you know, based on the fact that certainly his numbers weren't very good a year ago and their offense wasn't very good.
Right. Now,
I'm not trying to make excuses for Daniel Jones, but pocket quarterbacks tend to need continuity and stability within the rest of the offense, because he's not necessarily going to make special second reaction plays. So he can't necessarily compensate and camouflage for concerns throughout the rest of the offense. So last year, for instance, they had a revolving door both on their offensive line and at the receiver position. Now, we all know, and I'm sure it's being talked about this week in Nashville, given who they're playing, that Kenny Golladay, seemingly up to this point, has been a disappointment for the Giants after they signed him to a big deal a year ago. Kadarius Toney has seemingly been in and out of the lineup, and they're uncertain as to what he can give them. So there's still questions at receiver. The offensive line seems to have been solidified to some extent. Until we play, we don't know, but it seems to have been solidified. I'm sure they feel very good about their two tackles, left tackle Andrew Thomas and rookie right tackle Evan Neal. Mark Lewinsky was a very good signing from Indianapolis. He'll play right guard. So I think it's a better group than it was. And we'll see. Now, in an ideal world, I'm sure they would like to be able to line up and run the ball with both volume and production. And Saquon Barkley apparently is healthy.
Yep.
So, you know, I think they would like their offense to start there and work off that.
Yeah, I had Bud Dupree on the radio show today, Greg, and we were talking about Saquon, and he kind of said, you know, believe all the hype about Saquon. The injuries have bogged him down, obviously, right. And injuries have a tendency to do that. But players in the league seem to have, and understandably so, we've seen what kind of an electric playmaker he can be at times. But it's interesting, I think, always to kind of hear it from the players about the opposition. And Saquon Barkley is somebody who still commands a tremendous amount of respect from defenders.
Yeah. So, you know, I think that's the way they'd like to play. You know, much depends on the flow of a game, and much depends, obviously, on down and distance. You know, look, every team, not just the Giants, every team wants to be in a situation where they can stay somewhat ahead of the sticks. Obviously, that doesn't happen on every possession, but where you'd like to be in a situation where when you get to third down, it's third and three or four, as opposed to third and nine or 10. You know, I think if there's too many of those, I think you'll see a struggle with the Giants offense, and Daniel Jones might struggle as well. But, you know, obviously they will want to line up and run it. You know, the one interesting thing about Barkley, and he is explosive, and obviously you do not want him to get out in the open and have those long runs, which he's more than capable of. But I'm very curious to see him as a sustainer. You know, I think that was always a little bit of an issue with him. Not that he's not physically capable of doing it, Buck, but I don't think that even when he was healthy, that was his strength. I think his strength was that he could create a big play on any given play, but he was not a true sustainer, the guy that would get 4, 5, 6 yards, you know, the way Derrick Henry is. Derrick Henry is one of those backs that it looks like he gets 3 and he always gets 6.
Yeah.
And, you know, and Henry is a true sustaining back. Barkley did not seem to do that well. Now, again, I don't want to say he can't do it. He's obviously a gifted player, but, you know, I think that's something they'll be looking for.
Yeah. Personnel wise, they have Matt Breida in to work alongside Saquon Barkley this year. And he's obviously somebody who's had a variety of different uses across his career. I'm curious to kind of see, I'm curious to see what this rushing attack, Greg, as you kind of outlined, how they've tried to fortify, for lack of a better term, their offensive line, and how they want to take more pressure off Daniel Jones that way. To your point about Saquon not necessarily being a sustainer, I'm curious to see how that kind of manifests itself, especially when, as you mentioned, Daniel Jones is a pocket quarterback, but he can make plays with his legs. I'm wondering what kind of week one wrinkles we might see.
Yeah, and there will be something. And look, I think it'll be a really well-schemed pass game. You have two coaches in the head coach Brian Daboll and the coordinator Mike Kafka that, you know, have been very good. You know, we know what Daboll did with Josh Allen, and that offense had some really interesting schematic concepts in the pass game. We know Mike Kafka's background is Andy Reid, and Andy Reid is really good in the pass game with his concepts. So, you know, you're going to see some concepts that break down the Titans defense. You know, you're going to see that. The question is, do they execute those? Does Jones make those throws? You know, one of the things that is probably not talked about a lot in this league is the really good quarterbacks. And I'm not suggesting Jones is that guy at this point in his career, but you can't miss the throws that are there. You know, you just can't miss the layups. And when I say layups, I'm not talking about a 4-yard pass. You know, when you design a route concept against an anticipated coverage, let's say it's zone, and the throw is there, quarterback has to make those throws. And I think with Daniel Jones, he's more than capable of it. And that's what they're hoping, because I think with their schematics, with Daboll and Kafka working together, that you're going to get some really defined good throws for Daniel Jones.
It's going to be curious to see. He's obviously in his fourth year and is under significant scrutiny with the new coaching staff.
Without question, because they did not extend him, I do not believe.
That's correct. They did not pick up the fifth-year option for Daniel Jones. So we'll see how that goes. Now, Greg, we talked last week about the loss of Harold Landry and the impact for what that means in the defense, the variety of different ways that they like to line him up and where that gives them additional flexibility. But
searching HVAC near here.
Right here, ma'am. How can we help?
Wow, nobody local? Huh.
Wait, what? We are an HVAC company literally in your neighborhood. Why is she not seeing us?
Just all the big chains. Well, it is what it is.
What in the... Can you not see us?
Nope, they can't see you. Because you're buried deep in the list of local HVAC providers. You are invisible online. Introducing Cumulus Boost. Get a boost, get found, get on the map. Learn more at cumulusboost.com.
They have looked, you know, it will not be one player that replaces all of the things that Harold does within this defense. I think it's notable, though, that Elijah Molden is still not practicing, so they're absent. They're starting slot corner. Ugo Amadi, they seem to like, and I know he has played in the slot, as we talked about, for Seattle in years past before he was an Eagle for like 8 days. And I'm looking at what this defense still has up front. Denico Autry, he tells us he's fine, Greg, but he didn't practice all but like 2 days in training camp. And that was back in July. If they don't have that kind of push and without those two players in particular, I don't know what Autry's availability is going to be, but this seems like it might be a significantly different looking front than what we're accustomed to seeing.
Yeah, and Autry was a big factor a year ago.
So good.
Because of his ability to play where he played in the base and then move inside as a pass rusher, you know, next to Simmons. And they did some really good work together with TT stunts. I mean, that was a nice tandem inside. The player I'm most interested to see, and it looks like he could get meaningful snaps, and you can tell me more about him, but I remember when he came out of Florida State, and I thought he was an intriguing prospect, and I know he's on either his second or third team, is DeMarcus Walker.
Yes.
And I think it's maybe his third team, maybe his fourth team, but DeMarcus Walker has ability, and I think given the situation now, and look, you're closer to it than I am, we don't know about Autry. If he hasn't practiced, he may play Sunday, but it's not likely he's going to be out there for 70 snaps. So, you know, Walker could be a very intriguing player because he's got pass rush ability. And I think he's multi-positional. He can line up outside. He can line up inside. So he's just a player to really keep an eye on. And maybe he won't be a factor at all, but I think he has traits. I always thought he had traits.
No, you take what you can from things like unofficial depth charts that teams put out ahead of these week one games. And he is listed as a starting defensive end with, ironically enough, Autry is the outside linebacker opposite Bud Dupree in their base. But Walker, I mean, watching him in the preseason, Greg, I thought he showed the kind of ability that you talked about. And I know he's been functional for both Houston and Denver during his time there. Greg, the games that they run up front, you mentioned the stunts and how effective it was for the Titans last year. What that frees up for the linebackers behind them, though, I'm wondering what that kind of allows them to do, because it feels like David Long and Zach Cunningham in certain situations, because of some of those stunts, got some pretty clean rushes or pretty clean run stuffs and were able to play a little more freer because of the confusion that the front was causing up.
Yeah, and I'm thinking more of the fronts when it comes to the pass game. You know, they had some really good TT work inside with Simmons and Autry. And, you know, Simmons is so strong that, look, they did things where both were either penetrators, meaning that guy would go first, and then both could be used as loopers, looping around. Simmons is so strong that when he was the penetrator, he could just knock a guard or a center, you know, right off his mark and create space for himself, even though he was the penetrator and not the looper. You know, so they did a really good job of that a year ago. We'll see, you know, how many snaps Autry gets, but it's likely they're going to have to count on guys like Rashad Weaver, who had moments in the preseason. He's clearly going to get snaps. You know, another guy who's had a fascinating kind of weird career, given where he started his college career, is Deshaun Hand. You know, Deshaun Hand was the number one recruit in America coming out of high school in Tampa and went to Alabama. And while he was a good rotational player there, he never became one of those, you know, one of their studs. But he's got a lot of ability, and he's always had a lot of ability. So who knows, you know, but he's another guy that, like DeMarcus Walker, has traits to perform. It just hasn't happened yet.
No, they definitely like their depth up front. And it's worth noting that Hand ousted Laurel Murchison from his active roster, his initial roster spot. Right. Of course, we know these things are fluid throughout the course of a season, and Murchison is still there on the practice squad. But that was also somebody in the preseason, Greg, who it seemed the coaching staff liked the approach that he took. Obviously, in the games, you're looking at effort and, you know, finish and things like that. But the execution of it in practice, Terrell Williams, the defensive line coach here, has spoken highly of both Hand and Walker throughout the course of their time.
Well, let me ask you this, Buck. You know, Molden looks like, you know, he's been a limited participant. It looks like he may not go. Excuse me. Is it going to be Amadi? They wouldn't bring McCrary inside and play Farley?
It looks like Roger McCreary is the starting outside corner, Greg, as we've talked about a couple of different times. Now, I think they've given McCreary work at both throughout the course of training camp. And as things kind of started to solidify, for lack of a better term, late in camp, they started playing McCreary primarily on the outside. And they've had such a different a shuffling of defensive backs right. in here that you've seen a lot of different guys play it, like Chris Jackson, who got cut but is again back on the practice squad. So I don't have a clear answer on how that would look. All I know is that McCreary, they gave him some snaps there throughout the course of camp, and he seemed to handle it fine.
Yeah, well, I mean, McCrary obviously won the battle with Farley, and he's the starting outside corner, and he'll play left corner. They don't normally swap their corners, you know, flip their corners. So Fulton will play right corner, and McCrary will play left corner.
Yeah, and Farley's going to play in some form or fashion. I'm just fascinated to see how he fits.
Look, I mean, he's to me an outside corner, Farley. And if they're happy with McCrary and Fulton, I mean, truly happy, then there's not a lot of snaps for Farley.
Yeah, that's been kind of the question at this point. How that manifests, I assume they're gonna have several different looks, but it does seem like Roger McCreary is gonna hang on to that job.
Now I noticed that Lonnie Johnson has also been a limited participant, so he's injured as well.
He did not practice today. Both Molden and Lonnie Johnson, as well as Monday, did not practice, both dealing with groin injuries, according to the first injury report of the year.
Now, they can still go dime because A.J. Moore has been in this league for a while. He's played dime in his career. He was a dime player in Houston, so he certainly could fill that role if they want to play dime on third down, which, of course, they did last year as a standard deal. So A.J. Moore has done that. I don't know how they feel about Kalu in that role, but like I said, Moore has done it.
Yeah, and he plays special teams, which is, of course, is critical right. for a 46-man game day right. roster. Greg, for the Titans on offense, and we've talked about, you know, who they are and what they do a million times over, but looking at how they're planning to go into this particular game, their starting wide receivers right now are Robert Woods and Nick Westbrook-Ikhina, and we'll see what kind of role they carve out for Treylon Burks. But I wonder, seeing so much of NWI in this system and how he is functional, at least at all three of the positions that they ask wide receivers to play, yes. What have you kind of made of him, seeing a larger sample size out of necessity?
Yeah, he's been one of those guys that keeps showing up and has done well. And he's made tough catches in the middle of the field. That's what stood out to me, you know, going back over the last year or two. And he just, you know, he's probably one of those guys who just keeps showing up because that's what he is. So it's not surprising to me that he's still there and will still get meaningful snaps. Look, in an ideal world, when they are in their base offense, meaning they have either two tight ends or two backs, mm-hmm. they want Burks and Woods to be the wideouts. And maybe that's the way it will ultimately play out. And Westbrook-Ikhina will be the third receiver. But, you know, Burks obviously had kind of an up and down offseason. So we'll see how that plays out. You know, I guess another question for me, and you know, you speak to the coaches and they speak to the media down there, and I don't hear all those conversations.
Sure.
But, you know, as of now, is Aaron Brewer the starting left guard?
Yes. And that's been his job, really. I mean, since early on in camp.
Yeah. And again, he's a smaller guard. I think he's very competitive. I think for his size, he's tough and physical, you know, and I'm not going to, this is no personal knock on Aaron Brewer. It's just what I see on film. I still would believe watching tape that you would want to be better at that position overall. And he may end up playing the whole season and we'll see how it goes. Obviously they've got a back who can, you know, compensate if there's any offensive line concerns. But, you know, we'll see how that plays out because normally starting guards in this league are not the size of Aaron Brewer.
No. And we've seen Jeff Simmons all but physically pick him up and toss him a couple of times teamwork.
Yeah.
And, you know, Jeff is going to be one of the better interior defensive players in the league, but he's not the only one who could do that to somebody Aaron Brewer's size. We'll see what happens with Dylan Radins, but for the most part, now it's just about how they go out and execute against one another. Greg, we have football tomorrow between the Rams and the Bills. I know it's not going to make the matchup show, obviously, but I wonder from a personnel standpoint, a coaching standpoint, what you're kind of interested in beyond seeing a competitive football game.
Oh, I mean, there's a lot of elements to this game, you know, real X and O kind of get in the weeds elements. We won't necessarily get into that now, but I mean, I think, you know, just as a fan, which is the way I'm going to watch it tomorrow night, to be honest with you, people say to me, don't you take notes when you watch these games? No, because I'm going to come in and watch the tape. I would love to see one of those 38-35 games. Now, I don't know if it'll be that way. You and I both know that there's three or four games week one that end up being totally unpredictable. You know, I don't know if tomorrow night will be that at all. It's hard to know. You know, Josh Allen didn't, I think he had two series in the preseason. I don't think Stafford played a down in the preseason. So you just never know. Now, you're dealing with teams that the last couple of years have been among the best in the league numbers wise, both on offense and on defense. So you're dealing with two teams that are pretty complete, but you just never know. I mean, obviously two of the best quarterbacks in the league.
Yeah, no, it's going to be a lot of fun to watch. And of course, beyond that, I'm glad you get to enjoy one of these. And I know you get to enjoy football games like this more frequently than we probably imagine as a fan, but I'm glad that you get to just sit back and take this one in like the rest of us, Greg.
No, I'm looking forward to it. You know, of course, it's East Coast time, you know, so I get a little tired, you know, when these games get into the third and fourth quarter, you know, but that's the way it goes.
That's okay. We've all been there. Everybody, you know, starts eating like whatever's around to snack on in the house just to keep awake and make it through the football game. Of course, NFL matchup show back on this weekend. Set your DVRs, catch it on demand on ESPN Plus. Greg and the crew are going to be back breaking down the biggest games in the NFL. So many fun ones in week one. Greg, I know a lot of games don't make the matchup show, and I was kind of looking at week one's schedule a little differently this year.
What do you think the games are, Buck?
Well, I know Tampa Bay and Dallas is on there for sure.
That would be correct.
I know Kansas City and Arizona has to be a part of the matchup show.
That would be correct.
I would be surprised if Pittsburgh-Cincinnati was not on there.
Yeah, that's in the show as well.
I bet Jacksonville and Washington did not make the show.
You would be correct on that.
I know all of these games have interest to you. How many total games you guys covered?
Week one and early in the season for us is when teams have new coaches or significant changes in personnel, it's very hard for us to do those teams week one because you have to wait and see how that plays out. Because for us, it's all about integrity and credibility. You know, it's like, for instance, we're doing Packers at Vikings, okay? But we're not looking at the Packers offense because Aaron Rodgers is going to have two and possibly three new receivers, depending on Alan Lazard. I know he's been injured. So until we see how that plays out, you know, we're not going to do a piece basically to say, look at Aaron Rodgers, he's good. You know, we all know that, you know, so you know, that game's in the show, but we're not going to look at Rodgers. We're going to do Patriots at Dolphins. And one reason we're going to do that is with Darius Butler now on the show with me as the other analyst, the defensive coordinator for Miami is Josh Boyer, and he was Darius's defensive backs coach when he began his career in New England. So, you know, Darius knows him well and can speak to his philosophy. So we're going to do that. You know, we're going to do Ravens at Jets because – there's some really defined schematics with the Ravens offense. Mm-hmm. And essentially it's going to be very much the same. So we can do that. We're going to do Raiders at Chargers. because the Chargers essentially have the same offense.
Yeah, no, so I'm looking forward to watching the matchup show all season long and rewatching these episodes several times through, as everybody should be, as they try to learn how you guys break down the tape. And Darius is a great addition to the show. I'm really looking forward to seeing what he brings to the table. I've seen his work already, but now alongside you and Sal Pal, I know that's going to be great chemistry.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. So, yeah, it's the first one, and, you know, we're ready to go. So we'll see how it plays out. We'll see if we can fool him again, Buck.
Well, listen, Greg, that's more my game than it is yours, but I appreciate the humility. Greg, always appreciate it. Enjoy the football tomorrow night, and certainly we'll be back to break down the tape next week.
All right, Buck, thanks. I appreciate it.